From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations with scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Soundings now presents part two in a series of discussions about contemporary American religious thought and practice. What are some of the connections and tensions between religion and humanism, both secular and Christian? How should one measure the relationship between religious belief and conduct in American society? Addressing those questions in the following portion of the conversation, the panelists are Marjorie Heyer, Martin Marty, and Harmon Smith. Marjorie Heyer is religion editor at the Washington Post. Martin Marty teaches at the University of Chicago, where he specializes in the history of modern Christianity. Harmon Smith is a professor in the School of Divinity at Duke University. He recently completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center. Here is Marjorie Heyer.
I'd like to turn the direction of this a little bit and ask Marty, I think, how you understand the relationship between belief and behavior in terms of the polls that we get these days, that 95% of Americans believe in God, and it's a figure that's fairly consistent over the years and over the decades, and yet certainly in the mainline Protestant churches and the Catholic churches, there's a great slippage in terms of participation in the church.
Well, several things. On one level, I could be cynical and say it's a facade we create because there's a social pressure, and when a poll taker says, "Do you believe in God?" Good Americans believe in God, and therefore I believe in God. And some measure of such cynicism may always be in order in any study of human affairs. I would move on, though, from there to say, secondly, however, that I tend to take people at their word. They've had a lot of years to think about it. They've had a lot of ways to show it. And we know their definitions are very broad, but they're telling me something and not nothing when they're telling me they want to be measured that way. And if I interview them deeply and profoundly, I can meet them at the watering holes at 4:30 in the afternoon, and they seem to be pure hedonists, and I meet them in the emergency ward at 3 in the morning, and I find that they are asking all the basic questions that religious people ever did, including why is the God that I thought I could rely on not helping me now, or why am I that supported? So I would say I tend to take it at face value, and that would lead me then to the third and final thing to say. What we are seeing emerge, I think, in the modern world is a definition and a mode of practice of religion that is somewhat different, in that religion through most ages has by nature been social and communal. God didn't save Jews, God saved Israel, of which each individual Jew was a member. God didn't save people who came to Jesus Christ as their personal savior, God saved the church and created the church, of which personal believers did their own believing. The letters of Paul in the New Testament aren't written so much telling you how to be saved, the way a tract passer does it, because they're written only to people who, quote, are already saved. They're written to people who don't know how to live with each other. Male and female and bond and free and Jew and Greek, and he's constantly busy with the communal question. And primitive religion, historic religion, whatever word you want to give on it, has normally had that dimension. And what we're seeing is a revolution in which religion is, in the sociologist's unlovely term, becoming privatized. I think it shows up in the Enlightenment, about which we were speaking earlier, when James Madison says religion is a matter of opinion and you can't coerce opinion. He did a beautiful thing for religious freedom, but he also didn't connect it to social behavior, therefore. And when Thomas Jefferson said, "If I must go to heaven with a group, I do not want to go." When Tom Paine said, "My own mind is my church." When a century later, philosophers like James said, "Religion is what the individual does by way of thought, action, experience." When Whitehead says, "Religion is what a man does with his solitariness," they're setting us up for a post-industrial world in which people kind of have do-it-yourself religion, which is my way of saying that raw secularity, pure godlessness, denial of a transcendent or sacral sense, disappearance of a hunger for God, in Jim English's original terms, these are very rare in America, but the gap between those who have some dim sense that they matter and the numbers of them who find that the inherited institutions are helpful or integral to their expression is growing every year.
Marty, some of the terms that you used, the references that you made, the figures that you mentioned, are the domain of what are called the humanities. We are at the National Humanities Center as we speak. What is the connection between religion in this country and the various humanisms? Are the humanities taking a bum rap insofar as they're being accused of acting as the repository of disbelief and atheism?
I think the best we can do, as we did with religion, is to say there is a zone. And when you get into that zone, it feels more as if it's humanities than something else. Normally, when we say the humanities, and when the U.S. government says the humanities, when it established an endowment, it means things related to texts in culture, cultures of literacy, as expressed in lines that we arbitrarily draw called philosophy, some kinds of law, English, linguistics, literature, history, religion, and the like. And taken together, we, since 1898 in Texas, since the 1930s in Princeton, since the 1950s in modern university definition, tend to cluster and call the humanities. Now, I say there's a delicious ambiguity here because people who teach these things are in academic life called humanist. And that's the same word that the dictionary applies to some people who have philosophies of life which a priori rule out the sacred, the transcendent, the divine, or God, or whatever. And that has led some people who are worried about a values crisis in America to say, let's get rid of humanist type 2, because they are the expression of Satan or Antichrist. And in the process, they often swing very widely, and they clobber a lot of people who just happen to be teaching philosophy or letters or something of that sort. If they're really intelligent, and some of them are, they will know that we began to use the word humanist in Western culture, humanista in the Renaissance in Italy, as a revival of Greco-Roman and classic definitions of what it is to be human, definitions which bracket, rule out, or postpone discussion of whether we are divine creatures or whatever. And through the centuries, as these disciplines developed, that question, are we divine creatures? Is that integral to the definition of what is to be human? Got to be ever more recessive, and in the minds of some people was a negative question. That is, it is an attempt, the study of the humanities is an attempt to enlarge human imagination by imagining what it is to have been someone else somewhere else, to let texts disclose to us the possibilities of what it is to be human, or at least what the vehicles of humanity are, like speech and record and past. But through the centuries, for a lot of reasons, a lot of people pushed this to the background and even opposed it. So that by the 20th century, the word came more frequently than not to be used by people like, say, John Dewey, who in 1934 in his book, A Common Faith, said, a republic needs a common ethos, belief system, if it's to generate good behavior patterns, equality, freedom, things to stand up against totalitarianism with, and so on. And the churches, he argued, can't do this because they make reference to a transcendent deity whom you can't see, touch, smell, check out. You can make up anything in the name of this God. And so we need the values that have historically been called religious, and he called them religion too, on a different set of terms. And his book ends, it's time to make this faith explicit and militant. Well, a few people picked it up. There have been a couple of manifestos that pick it up. I think if I went into the typical humanities department of a university and started talking about the humanist manifesto or the need to be godless, they'd scratch their heads and say, well, that's, you know, that's a weird cult off there somewhere. So they may be functionally godless, and they may be systematically godless, but they're not taking signals from a humanist manifesto to get there.
Marty mentioned the Renaissance. A man like Erasmus understood himself to be a devout and faithful and orthodox Christian, but he zoned out, as it were, from some of his inquiries, the necessity of Christian or theological or religious presuppositions. And so he could argue on the basis of natural reason as was the case with the earlier sources to which he referred, Cicero and that crowd, certain things without ever having to appeal to Christianity or theology or that sort of thing. And I think Marty is right. People in humanities departments would probably not only shake their heads but also tear their hair if you suggested to them that they had to be a theist or a theological or a religious simply by virtue of the fact that they are teaching humanities. What has, it seems to me, happened is that the line, Wayne, has been drawn, but it has been drawn at a methodological point, and that is that one does bracket or suspend, but functionally that means denied the essentiality, the importance, the ingrediency of a religious point of view as precursory to an adequate capacity to interpret, analyze, whatever else one does with the kinds of materials one is dealing with. It's too strong a word, and I wouldn't want to use this, but I can't offhand think of another. But a kind of schizophrenia that seems to me unavoidable if simultaneously you want to hold on to some things that you would identify as of ultimate concern to you, but not allow those things to intrude upon your teaching of history or philosophy or whatever else.
Could we make a parallel here between religion and study and religion and the political order by using the concept of subordinating? That is, when I am a citizen of the Republic, I had better face it that as citizen I am subordinating my religion to the civil society, best illustrated by this kind of thing. If I am a member of the Jehovah's Witness, I do not believe in blood transfusion, and if my child is dying, a judge will intervene on my religion and take the child and give a blood transfusion. Or, I am a Christian Scientist who does not believe in fluoridation of water. I may vote against it, but that water is going to get fluoridated, and so I'm taking in a medicine I don't believe, unless I want a well of my own, and I probably can't get zoning regulation for it. So I am subordinating it. Now, in the academic study of religion, that in neither case do I stop being a Jehovah's Witness or a Christian Scientist, but it does mean that I do not fully act upon that all the time. Now, in the humanities, I'll take my own illustration, namely history. Before the humanist period, historians all worked with the doctrine of providence in the Western Christian world. And if you got in trouble and couldn't explain something, you just invoke God and say, that's it. And you could be considered a good historian doing that.
You mean God was the cause?
God was the cause, and I knew it. Mm-hmm. If our army was defeated, God was out to teach us something and punish us. If our army won, God was endorsing the rightness of our cause. But I knew exactly what God was doing. Now, today, I can be, say, a Jew who believes in providence, a Christian who believes in providence, but that belief, in a sense, is subordinated to the method, as Harmon Smith says, by which I approach history. Namely, if I don't have a document for something, and I make a judgment, and my colleagues in history say, where'd you get that? I say, well, I talked to God. They say, that's a very interesting little datum about your personal life, but that is not what history is. History, by the rules of the game played nowadays, is somehow you're developing something that left a trace, and there's no trace here. Well, I can say God left a trace because I didn't like Pharaoh's army and they got wiped out. They say that's an interesting statement of faith, but not a statement of history. Maybe the water just got too deep for their little horses. And so that's what I mean by subordination. There is never, I am both a Christian and a humanist, and in 30 years in this common practice, I've never been asked to deny the faith or anything of that sort, but I am asked as humanist to play the rules of the game among people who determine criteria by which you measure things, mm-hmm. whether or not one believes. And I think that's what Harmon Smith is getting at. And so the humanities are not anti-religious. They even may, in our time, cultivate the teaching of religion. If I go to a campus, they may say, go into the chapel and preach a sermon, and there I would try to, quote, compel faith. in the classroom, my covenant with the students is not one in which I've got to show them, if I'm a Mormon, that Mormonism is right and what they have is wrong. That would be a denial of the rules of the game in a private university as well as in a public, because that's not the study of religion. I may speak with passion, but the rules of the game would say whether I'm Catholic or not is irrelevant to my penetration of what Buddhism is about.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings. You're listening to the second segment in a series of conversations about contemporary American religious thought and practice. The panelists in the following portion of the discussion are Marjorie Heyer, James English, Harmon Smith, Martin Marty, and Mark Taylor. Marjorie Heyer writes about religion for the Washington Post. James English is a Jesuit priest at the Leesville Road Parish in Raleigh, North Carolina. Harmon Smith teaches in the School of Divinity at Duke University. Martin Marty is a professor of the history of modern Christianity at the University of Chicago. Mark Taylor teaches in the Department of Religion at Williams College. Here is Marjorie Heyer.
There's a real, Wayne has raised a question of a real problem here, and I think we may be faced with the problem of rescuing the word of humanities, humanism, because there is a real industry that's grown up around the idea of secular humanism. You can raise an awful lot of money out there by denouncing someone as a secular humanist, and it's something that is going to have to be dealt with in the years ahead. It's not a clear-cut thing, and the press very often gets caught in between. I remember a couple of years ago we ran an article that was done by a reporter on the Los Angeles Times on this whole question of secular humanism and the concern of the right-wing groups about secular humanism. And I think, as I recall, Martin Marty was quoted in the article. It's a very well-done article. We got phone calls and responses not only by the people who were concerned about secular humanism as a danger to quote-unquote our way of life, but we also got a number of irate calls from the local humanist association who were irate because we didn't call upon them for reaction and comment, local humanist association being about 22 members. And it was not obviously what those who attack secular humanism were not the ones that it was not the group they were concerned with.
In a discussion of humanism, there is certainly the humanism that I think has been defined, which brackets the transcendent. Isn't there also a very long tradition of Christian humanism, which is as long and as profound, which tries not to bracket that, but to make the transcendent an integral part of what it means to be a human, so that to study the human without including the transcendent is perhaps to impoverish the idea of what humanism is about?
Part of what excites me about the present situation is maybe it is an apologetic task, but I view it as a very exciting one, and that is to try to take account of how one can overcome the kinds of compartmentalization, which earlier I suggested kind of schizophrenia, by talking about a humanism which is not exclusive, which is not denying, but which is integrative, which is, to use another N word nowadays, holistic. I think there must be ways, because I don't understand myself as a compartmentalized being. I know that I have a number of roles that I alternately play, but there is a fundamental self which is not differentiated.
What I do when I would define myself as a Christian humanist, I would say that's not all the things that Christianity is about. Humanism, Christian humanism, doesn't save souls. It doesn't make sad hearts glad. It's an expression of the faith just as a Christian going into politics, a Christian going into arts would do. It's a vocation expressed. But I would argue to Christians who oppose humanities and humanisms that they're really going to leave a void if they are not articulate, because things that Christian humanism does is to give Christians special reasons to value the human story, the temporal story. Thus, to me, radical apocalypticisms which say the world is ending tomorrow and therefore I have no investment in it would be anti-Christian humanist. They may be theologically true, they may be better reporting than I can give, but I would naturally accent creation. I would naturally accent incarnation. Incarnation is not the whole zip of things. The atonement of Jesus is probably theologically richer to a lot of people who are sin sick. But if you want to ask, is the human story worthwhile? It's kind of interesting to say that in the Christian story, God touches it in the form of a human. And one can do this with so many of these features. Where it gets, having said all that, to be subordinated again, though, is that when I get around a table at the National Humanities Center, both my, or anyone like me, Jim English, my personal faith would be reckoned as a datum in my biography. The subject matter I might choose, like Christian history or literature of a Christian content, would be seen as an interesting thing, but I can't at some point and pull rank and say I necessarily have a better understanding of John Donne because I'm an Anglican Christian or whatever I am than someone who is a very empathic scholar who does it without the faith reference. So in that sense, there are some ways in which you could say one's faith may help determine the subject matter you're involved in, but I don't think we can say it gives you a superiority to people who don't have it. Flip that over and say, I also don't think that other humanists are fair if they assume that because you have a particular view of what it is to be human, you necessarily can't understand a text. It's possible that you may be the one with the real empathy for the text. As I'm talking, I'm aware that Mark Taylor sits over here and has all kinds of different views of what humanities are and what texts are, but what I've tried to comment on is to bring together what Brothers English and Smith were talking about.
Mark, let's hear them.
Well, I do think there's some very important issues that are raised by what I regard as the very helpful corrective to the critique of humanism from the angle of a certain religious trend in the country. I think it's absolutely correct to bring together a certain element of the Christian tradition and humanistic belief in this notion of Christian humanism. That suggests what is also, I think, very important to realize, and this may, in fact, be a topic for another day, and that is that the notion of the humanities is itself under attack not only from the point of view of a certain religious perspective, but from its apparent from the apparent opposite point of view. That is to say, there are those now writing, interestingly enough, some of those who come out of the very tradition, to use that word, of humanistic studies that now call into question the founding assumptions of the humanities themselves. A philosophical point of view which would be viewed by those who are critical of secular humanism, to use that language, as even worse than secular humanism, as the very opposite of their own religious point of view.
You mean the point of view that the humanities can wrap it all up in a nice, neat little package and that there's meaning and coherence and beginning and middles and ends?
Yes, and that the very notions upon which the humanities rest, the notion of, in some sense, a centered self, not necessarily an egocentric self, but a self that is a self-conscious, purposeful agent, a self that, as a self-conscious and purposeful agent, reflects a conscious and purposeful deity in some way, that self which creates texts which have a certain coherence and intelligibility that can be discovered, as can the rationale of the world created by such a God.
And a self that has tradition.
And a self that is situated in a historical tradition itself. The very notion of history itself, the words that Marty was using, the notion of history, and its link in the West very often to the notion of story, even in the word itself. That whole cluster of concepts is under attack by a very significant group of philosophers and scholars. So that from this philosophical point of view, the humanities do not stand in opposition to the Christian framework of the West, as the critics of secular humanism suggest. To the contrary, they're part of the same ideational matrix, which itself is unraveling, according to this line. And that paradoxically, you can read some of the claims of these antithetical critics. I mean, no one would seem to have less in common than these contemporary philosophers and these contemporary believers, and yet there's a certain common thrust to some of the criticisms that are raised in very interesting ways.
Another way to put this, I think, is that what their enemies would call anti-humanists who teach the humanities. These are people that the fundamentalists have not even located, but they're out there. May be forcing certain kinds of Christian humanists and philosophical humanists and Enlightenment humanists into a similar camp.
Right.
If the root word of humanism is Protagoras' theme, quote, man is the measure of all things, and the Christian would see this in a transcendent context, the human creature who belongs to the race that God revisits in the incarnation is the measure of all things, those two at least can talk to each other about the supreme worth and value and distinctiveness of what it is to be human. But there are now schools of thought in the humanities that would not say man is the measure of all things, but that man is, in a sense, the rather arbitrary vehicle of sounds and signs and signals that belong to the nature of the universe. But you don't necessarily have to channel them through humans. Computers could do it, or theoretically may someday. Or it isn't too important that humans do it. What matters is the structure of the universe, and so on. And that kind of questioning of the disciplines themselves, which would shatter what philosophy has been, or theology, or history, or whatever, may be forming a new intellectual communion between Christian humanists and other humanists.
So can I ask a question? Are you saying, and if you are, I think it's something I wanted to say, that humanism basically can be done in a variety of ways, humanistic studies. There is a legitimate secular humanism because there are people who live human lives and reflect on human life without a religious aspect to themselves. On the other hand, there is a humanism that has to take into account the experience of other human beings, which is a religious experience and therefore an experience of the transcendent, that this is a dialogue rather than a warfare.
I'm saying something else as well. I am saying that there are different humanisms. There are different forms that humanism can take. I am also saying that those different forms share certain foundational notions, if you will, that themselves have become highly problematic in the contemporary world and contemporary discussion, and that what is radical in the contemporary discussion is the calling into question of the whole network of notions that binds Christian and non-Christian humanism.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond. You've been listening to the second part in a series of discussions about contemporary American religious thought and practice. The panelists were Martin Marty of the University of Chicago, Marjorie Heyer of the Washington Post, Father James English of Raleigh, North Carolina, Harmon Smith of Duke University, and Mark Taylor of Williams College. Soundings would like to hear from you. Send your comments to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Soundings is made possible by grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities.